And honorable members, the Deputy Minister, the DG and the team, our interested guests in the house, I must say we've got a huge program, not even we can turn into a problem, the way I'm looking at it. So my appeal to all parties, especially those who are going to be making presentations, to bear with us. Time is going to be a major factor. So we will have to find a way to squeeze. Secondly, we will patiently listen to the presentations, but I'm sure we will agree that we will then be left with one option to look as to what happens if we don't finish on time with this exercise. I don't see the, except if they send someone I assume is not from, when he's from the AG office. I hope they'll be here on time. But as you look on the agenda, honorable members, I'm sure I must start by saying that the committee we meet under dark clouds, where we have lost one of the members of the House, but also a long-serving member of Parliament and a minister, initially from the office of the President, and the minister of the minister of public service and administration, and the protectors, the VIP protection team, and I know that probably many of the members might be preparing to descend to in Limpopo this weekend. I think it will be proper on behalf of the committee to further extend our condolences both to the family as well as the relatives, all relatives and the organization. And I want to say this thing, because sometimes we make an offside, and the profession of the police service. It's not only us in Parliament who have lost, but also I'm sure they've lost some of the most dedicated members of the police service. And on that note, I must say that we will try and deal with most of the issues as contained. The issue also that one must extend an apology as we go to the apologies is the fact that I'm expected to attend another meeting at 12:45 of the chairpersons of committees, and I think there are quite a number of issues that one feels they need also to be addressed at the level of the chairpersons of committees. So members should bear in mind as we proceed. Okay. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, members and the guest. I've got an apology from Mr. Malema. He's running late to me.
Okay. In terms of the program in front of us, we have the presentations that we are going to be receiving and specifically it's around the departmental budget and the annual performances. We have asked first the which will be first led by the researcher as well as the content advisor. They will know how to share. That's why I was saying I'm worried that the AG, which we spoke to, they will be the one, you know. Thereafter, we will have the actual, when I say actual, because that's what we're supposed to be dealing with. But we thought it's important for the two presentation that to lay a foundation so that honorable members can have a better angle. Subsequent to that, we will have the briefing from the department, and then we'll have questions of clarity as well as responses. I must say that it's not just questions of clarity, but also contributions. I don't want people who come to meetings just to ask questions, but they must express views so that they can be incorporated. That's the task that we're having as a committee. And then we'll look at the minutes. I must say, honorable members, I think it's important also to extend an apology. You recall that last week we could not sit with the committee, and I think the committee deserves an explanation. Unfortunately, on the matters that we're dealing with, the request from the department was that they were not ready to make those presentations that were requested. And we felt, as per what was raised, we couldn't just come and do the adoption of minutes and then go home. And we felt that rather than that, we must do the reasonable things and excuse members to on their time. So I think it's important so that we don't just move on as if there's no information that must be shared with members. So we thought that was the appropriate thing to do and to waste the time of members. The second part is that we're also supposed to adopt the report which we have compiled, but again, having read the report and felt that there were gaps in the report, it's important to go back and redo it again, and then we submit to members, and we submit it even during the period if we go on recess. We still forward it to all members so that members can look at it, including what we want, we'll be recommending in the report itself on how to handle it. So that report is almost done full, but having done it, we realize that there are some gaps that were left in our engagement. So rather than to take it here, start to debate it again between ourselves and the admin staff, it would not have been. It's better to present a report that we can be able to be confident that it is a report that members want. So we still make that report available. I think that's one outstanding matter. The oversight visit in the East, in KZN and Eastern Cape, we will also provide that information. If honorable members accept the proposed program, is there anyone who wants to move? Honorable Mandel.
Thanks, sir. And also, thanks for the brief. Good morning, members. I'd like to move, Chairperson, that we adopt the agenda as outlined. Thank
you. Seconder. Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks for the Chairperson. I want to thank you.
Will both me, I've already been excused. So all members, those who will be making presentation, time for this one. Can we give it to you, Dr. Nicole and Mr. Guayama? You'll decide. But time, unfortunately, is also out on your side.
Thank you, Chair. We will be brief and to the point. The first thing, honourable members, which we're going to do is just remind the committee of the issues in the budgetary review and recommendation report, the BRRR, which the committee adopted last year. We will review briefly the legislative issues in the DMR strategic plan for 2019, and then we're not going to go through the budget step by step. We're going to leave that for the department, as there are no issues we thought we needed to raise apart from those which we put in the written document, which has been circulated.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Kuyama will end with some two key issues for consideration by Parliament. The BRRR last year raised five very important issues relating to the finances of the department. Firstly, saying that more funds are needed to strengthen inspection in respect to transformation, health and safety, and the environment. Secondly, specific funding was required for the integration of DMR databases to ensure transparency in the applications for and granting of licenses. Thirdly, the Council for Geoscience left an amount of 115 million rand to implement fully the requirements of the Geoscience Amendment Act of 2010. Fourth, the future growth of the mining sector is dependent upon continued exploration. And in this regard, about 1 billion rand is needed by the CGS over the long term to provide for the knowledge base that will attract exploration companies and also assist the state-owned mining company in its exploration endeavors. Finally, the state liability for the environmental harm caused by mining operations, which has in the past been estimated to involve costs in excess of 40 billion rand, needs to be addressed. Present resources, despite their recent increase, are not adequate, and there is a need, the committee indicated, for these issues to be revisited. The Department of the Minister of Finance has not yet tabled a specific response to these issues. He says that he will do it in due course. But on page 110 of the budget review, he indicates that the response is unlikely to be positive. He says, due to the constrained economic outlook, the scope to provide additional funding has been limited. And I imagine that will be the theme which he adopts in his specific responses to these issues. Nevertheless, the department has, as indicated here, reprioritized funds within their existing baselines to ensure that some of these issues are being dealt with. For example, if you look at the personnel table in budget, you will see that the program 3, the number of employees, program 3 is mineral regulation, which deals with all the inspectors. That is increasing the number of employees from 355 in 2013-14 to 403 this year, indicating a substantial increase in the inspectors in the department, and it will go up to 415 by the end of the NTF period. The Council for Geoscience has been granted an additional amount. However, while they need 56 researchers and staff to fully implement the Geoscience Amendment Act, they indicate only able to employ 20 additional staff over the MTF period. There's no indication at the moment that there'll be meaningful state funds for supporting the mapping, the extended mapping, which is needed by the Council for Geoscience. With regard to the environmental harm caused by mining, in the annual performance plan, the department indicates on page 13 that a report on the estimated state liability for rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines has been completed by actuarial scientists commissioned by the department and is being considered at the moment, so that the committee should be able to expect an update on the amount of money that is required to correct these problems, if not an increased amount to actually do the work of correction. The legislative issues which are covered by the committee were outlined in the strategic plan, which was presented last year up until 2019. The legislation which the department will present in 2015-16 are firstly the MPRDA bill issues. Secondly, is hoped the Mine Health and Safety Act amendment, which according to the annual performance plan is now resting with decision processes in NEDLAC. And thirdly, the state-owned mining company bill. Those are three legislative issues which are expected to be placed before the committee this year. In addition, there are the regulations on the technical regulations on shale gas. These were expected to be completed in February, but that has not been the case. The committee requested a briefing on these regulations once the department had finalized them and completed their internal consultation processes. A number of legislative issues, however, while they're in the strategic plan, they're not an APP, indicating that they will not be brought to Parliament in 2015-16. And these are a review of the Precious Metals Act and the Diamond Act, the development of the Geoscience Amendment Act regulations, which are contingent upon additional funding, and then a review of the MinTech Act. I'm now going to hand on over to my colleague, Takuyama, to deal with two issues.
Thank you, sir. I will conclude the presentation by touching on two issues that have to be considered by this committee in the coming financial year. The first issue is the agency of dealing with the MPRDA amendments. As we all know, that this was identified by the NPC in 2011 as a concern to sustainable mining industry. So we felt that it will be important to understand if there is legislation that is dependent on this, on the component of this bill that is being negatively affected by the non-finalization of this bill from the department. Secondly, the need to promote transformation in the mining sector. As we know, this is a key objective of the MPRDA, and it is very difficult to determine the state of transformation in the industry. However, this year, it's a special year in the sense that the audit of the charter is taking place. So we can assist both the DMR as well as the committee in assessing what has been done and what still needs to be done to achieve transformation goal. That concludes my presentation.
Yeah. Very short. It's quite a very difficult record for any other person to break. I thought you were still continuing. Okay. Can I do the favor, honorable members? AG, you must sit here. Or you come this side. Maybe because you still want to plug your stuff. Will I be doing that? I was not going to give you a chance to ask questions of clarity, but because I know they still want to assess the, or should I assume when we do have the copies with us, we can continue in the meantime. Yeah, I will do this, honorable members. They will give us the presentation before we go to the department. We will give you an opportunity just to combine both what Dr. Nicole and Mr. Bayama have done in the AG, and then you get those clarities, because they are just helping us on the forefront. And then we will then ask the department to make that presentation. But I just request, because this one, they just help us on how to approach or what is. It is more like a generous opinion, though it's not legal, legal opinion. But it's an opinion that can help us in trying to probe issues on what should be. It's not limiting. We don't have to take it if we want. But I think it does try to assist. On that note, because we do have copies, I know we like Bioscom. You can continue. I can see you are still. I don't know whether you were using the stairs as you were coming up or the lift, but unfortunately we have to, because of time constraints, as you've seen the two prisoners that they set a record that even might. A sprinter cannot match. So I'm not saying you must do like them, but you can try and match them. Okay. You will introduce your team, not me.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Professor. Good morning, members. Good morning, representatives from the department. My name is Margaret Sioka. I'm the senior manager responsible for the audit of the Department of Mineral Resources. Sitting next to me is Stephen Maluleke. He's the manager who's working with me on this audit. Today I'm going to share with you, basically to give you feedback in terms of the review that we did on the APP for the department. And then I also want to share with this committee significant issues which we have identified during the audit, and this we normally do it in order to ensure that we avoid any surprises at the end of the year. So if there are issues that require the involvement of this committee, so it is our responsibility to brief the committee throughout the audit so that we don't wait until the end of the audit. And also I want to touch on the assurance model. Basically, just to say everybody, including Treasury, Parliament, Management, this committee, Audit Committee, everybody has a role in making sure that the department at the end of the day, they achieve a good audit opinion. I've also on the slide prepared an analysis of the budget just to see how much percentage of the expenditure goes to personnel, how much goes to transfer payments and the payments of goods and services, just also to share with the committee. And then also I would like to emphasize the responsibilities of the accounting officer just to assist this committee in order to effectively provide that result, the oversight role. And I'll also talk to progress made by the department in implementing the action plan. This action plan basically relates to the audit issues that we have raised during the prior. So the department has been tracking those issues in order to make sure that they were properly, the action plan was properly implemented. On this slide, it's basically our reputation, the ADSA reputation promise or mission, which I will read. The Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate, and as the Supreme Audit Institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. So in this reputation, what I can highlight today is the part dealing with enabling oversight. This is basically what we are doing here, working with the committee to highlight issues that we have identified, as I have explained earlier, and also for the committee to give us feedback. If there are issues that the committee would like us to have a look as part of our audit, so this is the opportunity for the committee also to share with us. On this slide is basically the oversight model, which relates to Parliament, also this committee, provincial legislature, or municipal council. It's basically to remind all of us about the oversight model, which involves the policy development of identifying the desired impact, also specifying performance indicators, which is mainly the part of the department, which will form part of the operational planning and budget, which is the critical part of today's presentation. So just to remind the committee of this oversight model. And then this slide talks to the oversight component portfolio committee mandate. Also just a reminder to the committee of the roles and responsibility in terms of 201. Just a summary of those, just sitting as a reminder. This slide talks to considerations for portfolio committees when dealing with the surveillance and monitoring on the APP. Basically, this committee working with the department is to ensure that the annual performance plans are aligned to the national development plan, making sure that those outcomes which are included in the national development plan are also featured in the APP for the department. And also the committee needs to ensure that, also talking to the department to ensure that there is adequate human and financial resources in order to assist the department in achieving the APP. Well, you will notice that when the department has the strategic objectives, they also have to link those objectives with the budget so that it can be clear that the budget is sufficient enough to assist the department in achieving the set objectives. And also the committee with the department needs to ensure that the targets are realistic and smart. The questions to be asked is how the entities will achieve the APPs. This will be the engagement between the department and the portfolio committee. More importantly, the portfolio committee should review quarterly progress against the APP targets, which means the portfolio committee should get hold of, should receive the quarterly reports of the department, analyze them, and make sure that if there are issues, those issues can be addressed in the particular quarter. To say we shouldn't wait for the year end, because when it's year end already, even if there's you have any recommendations to the department already, it will be late to do those recommendations. So there should be interaction between the department and the committee relating to the progress made against achieving those targets. If there are issues, then the department then will come up with an action plan in making sure that those issues are addressed and making sure that at least at the end of the year we have a good picture. The portfolio committee should also review the annual achievement against the APP targets, which I've already touched. And then this is the cycle which goes on each year. So the portfolio committee also should track any changes to the APP. So if there are changes, those changes should be communicated to the portfolio committee. So I think this slide is mainly the critical part of the presentation that I'll be making today. The next slide talks to the assurance model, which I've already indicated. To say first level should be management, and then second one would be oversight assurance, which consists of coordinating or monitoring institution, internal audit, and audit committee. And the third one is independent assurance, which is the level that consists of this portfolio committee, the public accounts committee, and the national assembly. So basically, on that slide, it shows each level the responsibility for each level in making sure that the departments achieve good results. And the important point to note is on the audit committee part, within the portfolio, we have identified or we've noticed that the audit committees within the mineral resource portfolio, all of them are effective in assisting the department to achieve the objectives. The next slide talks to the role of a county officer, as I indicated earlier, just for the committee to be aware of the role and responsibility of the accounting officer, so that if those roles are not done properly, then the committee can be able to talk to or advise the accounting officers in order to ensure that everything is done properly. What I can highlight on that slide is on the middle block that talks to the prevention of unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and if discovered, reporting to Treasury. So on this one, we have identified that there has been a decreasing trend in terms of irregular expenditure for the department. There hasn't been any unauthorized expenditure of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. On this area, we can safely report that the department is doing well, and we're hoping that in the years to come, we'll see a picture where there's no irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. On the third block, it talks to taking appropriate disciplinary steps against any official contravening the PFMA. On this one, the office has introduced a concept of consequence management, which we will audit in detail. For example, if an irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure has been identified in the department, we would want to see what the actions the accounting officer or his delegate has taken to make sure that if the person is found guilty, is paying back the money, or if there were any disciplinary actions which were taken. If the accounting officer is not providing this role, we might find a situation where this issue is also included in the audit report. because what we say is that if people carry on contravening the BFMA and nothing is being done against them, you find that we're setting an example which is not good. Other employees will say, okay, employee access and this and nothing has been done to them. So that's why the AG is saying now this year our focus is to make sure that we take through this process until the end to see if somebody is supposed to pay back the money, that part has been done. If somebody is supposed to be disciplined, that part has been done as well. The next slide is basically the AGSS aspirations for the public service. Basically what we're saying as an office, we want to see a public sector that has a robust financial and performance management system that has oversight and accountability, that shows commitment and ethical behavior by all. And also as an AGSA, we want to make sure that our staff are competent and value-adding to Auditor General and also to the public sector. So basically, we say we want to increase our visibility of leadership. We want to have more interaction with this committee, with public accounts committee, with the department, with the minister, so that at the end we can make sure that we add value to the department. AGSA review of DMR 2015-2016 APP. So basically we're saying we've covered two areas, we're basically covering two areas, which is usefulness and reliability, in order to have an impact-oriented APP, which is aligned to the framework for managing program and performance information. So this framework basically consists of the planning, the budgeting, and monitoring cycle slides, as per slide one that I've discussed. It also has the definition of inputs, activities, output, outcome, and impact, the definition of indicators, and the definition of targets. It basically guides the department when they are busy with their process of developing the APP. So with those two areas of reliability and usefulness, the part of usefulness, we look at the presentation, whether the APP is presented according to the financial management performance framework, and also we look at the consistency. We look at whether APP objectives, key performance indicators, and targets are in line with the strategic plan objectives, just to make sure that those strategic objectives are carried out over the 5-year period. With the performance indicators, we look at whether they are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. When we look at the reliability of reported performance information, we basically check the validity, the accuracy, and completeness of assessment. The next slide I won't discuss in detail, but it basically outlines the process that we follow when we review this APP for the department. On this slide, we're saying we have reviewed the APP for 2015-2016, and we didn't really identify any significant issues that warrant reporting in the committee. On this slide, we are basically analyzing the audit findings history related to performance information. So you'll notice that from 2010-2011 up to 2013-2014, there were no significant findings that were reported in the audit report. So basically, the department is doing good when it comes to performance information. So at least we can safely say we are there. If the office decides to issue a formal opinion on AOPO, so as a department, we can say we are safely there. This slide provides an analysis of the 2015-2016 budget and how it has been allocated per program. So we have 90% for administration, 50% for mineral regulation, 11% for promotion of mine safety and health, 55% of mineral policy and promotion. So you notice that a majority goes to the last program, which is mineral policy and promotion. On this slide, DMR appropriation by economic classification, we basically showing which percentage goes to compensation of employees, goods and services, payment for capital assets and transfer payments. So basically, for 14-15, we have 82% which goes to compensation of employees, 18% goods and services, 1% goes to payments for capital assets, and 49% goes to transfer payments. And basically, we will notice that the compensation of employees is basically a lesser percentage as compared to the other areas. And on this slide, majority goes to transfer payments to the entities within the department, falling within the department, and basically those transfer also is still to carry out the mandate for the department. We have also analyzed the irregular expenditure as a percentage of total expenditure. And I have indicated for 2013-2014, we had about 0.11% of irregular expenditure, which has declined, like I've indicated. So hopefully we'll see a situation where there's no longer irregular expenditure reported or incurred. On this slide is just a summary of our implementation of the action plan by the department. Action plan, we focus mainly on the HSA findings which were issued in the 2013-2014 financial year. There were about 33 findings which were issued, 27 have currently been implemented, and 6 are in progress. Of the 6 that are in progress, it's basically the part of receivables. You notice that in 12-13 there was an issue of valuation for receivables, and also the department is working on this just to make sure that this issue is no longer there and the value of the receivables is complete and accurate. So the department is still working on that, and the department is working on finalizing the implementation of the revenue system, which will also assist the department in resolving that issue of receivables. So those are mainly the issues that are still in progress. The final slide, we're saying in terms of the audit progress, the audit is progressing well. We have completed our planning. We're busy with the execution, and currently there are no significant issues that have been identified to date, which can maybe impact on the audit report.
Well done. You did your best. I was still listening. On that note, honorable members, any questions or thoughts? Dr. Nico and Mr. Goyama, you are capable to answer from the back. Okay. You want to read the minds of the people at the back. Okay. Honorable Mandela, Honorable Matala, Mwiti, Honorable Rima, Honorable Jaffa. Okay, I can see. Okay. In that room and in that fashion, Honorable Mandel.
Thank you, sir. We're not fashionistas, so we won't go in that fashion. Let me welcome the report, Chair. We are really grateful from the AG and the researchers for their input. Just to gain clarity, Chair, on the issue is brought to our attention by the AG, particularly on slide 7. And slide 7 talks to managing and safeguarding assets and liabilities. Second bullet point talks to take appropriate disciplinary steps against any official contravening the PFMA. I want to understand, Chairperson, that, you know, there is a continued issue where those that are found to have committed the wrongdoings are required to pay back the money. And I'd like to understand what legal steps are being taken against those defaulters. If I go into a pub and I take a trouser out of pub and I walk out of the store, I'm caught, I'm arrested, I'm put in jail. Yet we have officials that continuously do not account for government funds and also are found to have used government funds, yet no steps are taken against them. And I'd like to understand from the AG, what do you suggest ought to be done when you speak to disciplinary steps? If we may come to the slide number 17, irregular expenditure. We have the figures, if you're looking at 2013-2014, the regular expenditure that amounts, I would take it that being 1.5 million.
Yes.
And I would like to understand what in your own assessment and your own findings is the main contributor to this irregular expenditure. And if there are cases that have resulted out of this irregular expenditure, what disciplinary measures have been undertaken? Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm on the AG report. It's a good presentation for the good work done by the department. But that does not mean the department must relax, because we're at work, we must work and make sure that next time we get what we're supposed to do for our people of this country. One of the questions was raised by Jose here next to me. It's just that name from the royal family. We are raising some critical issues here because it's a concern. I want to qualify the questions that was raised by the Honorable Mandela, yeah? With regard to those who fail to pay back the money. I want to get the clarity with regard to how does the law works with regard to such people. Even if we arrest them, I don't know whether they are going to be arrested, but we want them to pay back the money, as you said. If they fail to pay back the money, is it not possible for us maybe to get some, I don't know how can I put it, no? To if this person will be working for the state, and I don't know, can we get some fuel, some potions from his is a pension fund to pay back the money, because if you arrest these people for a period of 10 years, 20 years, they simply get away with the matter. And somebody will do the same to say, I can make the department for billions of money, but I can go 20 years, but after a 20-year period, I'm richer than the state. So what is the law saying about that? Number two, there is a slide which I didn't get it very well here. Number 11, it's a review of the DMR. Can you unpack this slide, because I couldn't understand it very well. I can't. Being after this meeting, somebody can ask me about this, the slides, I won't be able to pass. The other one, page number 16, appropriation by economic classification. You talk of compensation of employees are very low. Why this compensation of employees vis-a-vis the transfer payment are not on the same path? I thought maybe the compensation of employees would be more than the transfer payments. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
One question arising out of the presentation of Dr. Nicol and Mr. Kodama. You did say something about the DMR's priorities for legislation to do with the state mining company. I didn't see that in your document, and I just missed it. Could you tell me where it is, and if you have any information on the status of this?
Thank you. I've also got one question. Particularly Kazuko. So the question I have pertaining the need, Dr. Nicol spoke about the need, but even today we still talk about the need to promote transformation in the mining sector, and even goes on saying it is hard to judge the performance in this area in mining sector. So I just want to know maybe what is it that still we are talking the same thing of a need. Why is it so difficult maybe to implement that to transform the mining sector? Is it a resistance to change, or is it a lack of commitment to from the side of our people? Thank you.
Thanks for the questions, members. When you were asking questions, I think some of the responses the department will also assist me, will give their input as well in terms of the responses. The first question, which was relating to slide 7, which said what legal actions taken against those people who were found to have maybe misused the funds. What I know is that the department has to first do some proper investigation in order to say, okay, this person has been found to have done wrong, and there was money involved in that case. And normally then the department, if the person is found to have been done wrong, and they can be asked to say, you have misused the funds, therefore you're supposed to pay back the money. But if it's a serious case, my knowledge is that you can also involve you can institute the legal agents against this person. I'll ask the department to assist me in that one. But also, this is the reason why, from the AG side, they previously will just report to say there was an irregular expenditure which was incurred. This is the amount, and we'll stop there. But now we want to formalize it to say this is the expenditure. The department made some investigation. Was there a person who was liable? What has been done by this person? So that will be my response for the first question. In terms of Flight 7, the irregular expenditure, the question was right to the what are the main contributors. With the department, we've noticed that it's mainly the issue of quotations. If the department is supposed to obtain three quotations, maybe they've obtained two, but because the law requires them to obtain the three quotations, then it will then result, if they didn't comply, then it will result in the irregular expenditure being checked. And on this one, mainly you'll find that it doesn't mean that the money was misused, but the fact is that the required number of quotations was not obtained. And we're saying if you have obtained a required number of quotations, maybe you might have spent less than what you spent on this one supplier. On the question which relates to paying back the money taken, is there anything that we can do maybe to get a portion of the money from the salary of that person? So on this one, the issue of the law, I'm not actually sure to say what does the law say, but it's also related to the first one, to say the department will investigate and the department is allowed to maybe deduct a portion of that money that is the person has misused. And I would also request the department to just give us input in terms of this question. The other question was to just discuss in detail slide 11, which I will do now. Slide 11 talks to reliability of reported performance information. So basically what we're saying is when the department has prepared that annual performance report, what we are checking, the validity part, is it talks to we're checking whether those performance outputs that are included in the annual performance report are valid, to say what they've recorded, there is evidence to support. If they say they've made inspections of the compliance with the social labor plan. So we will check that to say, okay, there are the appropriate evidence to say they've made, let's say, about 1,000 investigations. And then the accuracy part is, if they say they've made 1,000 investigations on their report, we'll also check the evidence to say, okay, the evidence also talks to the 1,000. And then the completeness part of it is to say, what they have on the evidence, to say, these are the they will have reports of investigation that have been carried out. So we check from the reports and then we trace it to, we check from the investigation reports, we check it to the annual performance report to say indeed they've recorded everything that they've done. So it's basically the nutshell of that slide 11. But it mainly deals with the annual performance report just to check if it's accurate, complete and valid. The last question was on slide 16, and when we were preparing the presentation, one of the information we were supposed to give feedback is to say if we can analyze for this committee to say what percentage goes to compensation and what percentage goes to payments of employee transfer payments. So the question was to say why is the compensation of employees very low as compared to transfer payment. On this one, I think when you look at the DMR, it's not labor intensive, like if you, for example, you take look at the Department of Home Affairs. So that's why you find that the compensation of employees is not higher when you compare to other expenses. But also it's a good thing because we can see that at least most of the budget of the department, it goes to the service delivery of the department. So sometimes you'll find other departments where compensation of employees is more than 80% and then they don't have sufficient funds to carry out the mandate of the entity. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Lorimer, the the only reference we have to the Sonco bill is on page 3 of the analysis. Yeah, and we don't have any additional information. We're just able to point out that it is additional to this list of planned priorities that was first given to Parliament last year in the strategic plan. Ministers twice referred to it, both actually in this document and in the situation analysis for the present year, an intention of the department, but the time plans for the introduction of the legislation are not strictly indicated. With regard to Mr. Yatta's question on the need to promote transformation and the difficulty of deciding whether it is the companies that are resistant or whether there's a fault on the side of society, the companies all say that they have complied with the mining charter. The DMR pretty much says that they have not complied adequately. And there's wide agreement that transformation in the mining industry is not sufficient. At the same time, DMR has got very wide powers under section, to enforce section 100 of the MPRDA. And so the question arises, if they've been given huge powers by Parliament to drive transformation, and yet transformation hasn't occurred, that obviously costs some reflection on the work that has been done by the department, because over the last 10 years, transformation ought to have been achieved by the instruments that were allocated to the department by Parliament through the legislation. Mr. Kuyama just has a comment as well.
Thank you, Chair. As Dr. Kuyama said, I think up to now, the evidence, anecdotal evidence, has suggested that transformation is not as fast as most of the stakeholders would have liked. However, given that there has been a review of the BEE Charter, this will give the DMR a clearer picture, which is objective, which will give them a definite measurement that will tell them of the pace and the scale of transformation. Thank you.
We have not answered the question from Honorable Lauren. Ripley, how did you miss me? otherwise, I've got a potential to...
I repeat him.
I was going to say, repeat it for me.
Chair, I refer him to page 3 of the analysis of the budget, which it is mentioned. But the details are not what Mr. Lauren repeated.
Okay. Any? I can deal with things, also, you know. But I want them where they are connected, not to one. Any other further questions of clarity? You see, I should do as fashionable. Honorable Tiginin.
Thank you very much. Hey, traffic was very hectic today. So, yeah. But where I am, Chair, I think I will follow up with the age issues. Yes, Chair, but through the department also, Chair, on these matters. You see, this issue of having no recourse, in particular in the department side, it's becoming a problem of taking us back. Because if you fail to stick to controls, automatically it goes back to where you require some precondition, you normally have one or two. I'm opening up this thing because it normally comes back time to time, not only to the departments, and all departments, local municipalities and all of that. Now I think it is important that we should find a way of dealing with that. You normally find that it comes through human resource, you know, and all of that, when they are dealing with those particular issues. I think we need to stop it and deal with it. I think the audit committees from the department must handle these matters before they go to AGs. I think it is better to deal with that. We can't continue to into issues of simple ones that can deal with them. Because if somebody fails to do 1, 2, 3, at least we can't allow, you know, Bajura or a DG to come and answer for that. But there's someone that has to deal with those issues at a particular level. So I think we have to deal with that. Second matter, the issue that was asked on the transformation. I know that in the department we have a transformation officers. I think somebody is able to do a particular something that must deal with that work that's supposed to be dealt with. We can't have people go to work and go back home without doing anything. I think it's important that we find a way of monitoring and able to make sure that we deal with the issue of control properly. So that we go out from these findings, the petition findings that are coming up with AG. We are happy, AG, with your report, because this time no particular, but if we close these gaps that I'm raising now, it will assist the department to have a very clean judgment when we're dealing with them, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
You saved my time. I was auditing you on the time. I can safely say you are released. Thank you very much, and I'm sure it's going to be all valuable. But you can still say, no, you are not dismissed, you are released. Those are two different areas. The Deputy Minister and your chief, DJ. In the meantime, can you just take a 2 minute stress break? Once you are, the department is putting up its machines.
How are you? Yeah, you should have been for the first time. Yeah, I think you have that. Thank you. Okay, honorable members, can we resume with the DMMDMB? You see, the problem is that some of us have been exposed in municipalities. We even know that the DMM, which is the Deputy Municipal Money, with the DM, as well as the DG, I will leave it to you, the Honorable Deputy Minister. Just again to say that we know we're dealing with serious matters, but we'll have to deal with them also within the confines of time. But over to you, Deputy Minister.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much to yourself and honorable members here. But Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, let me take the opportunity to thank you very much for allowing us this time to present the 2015-16 Annual Performance Plan for the Department of Mineral Resources. We also wish to join you, Chair, as we commence this presentation by conveying our deepest condolences to the Chabane, Sekele, and the Nzwani families on the loss of their loved ones. To us, the late Wallace Chabane was not just a colleague, he was a leader, a brother, a gallant fighter, a visionary, and a hard-working minister. He was not a colleague only as well, but a stalwart of our movement. We lay his mortal remains to eternal rest at his home village in the Limpopo province on this coming Saturday. From his contribution and that of others, South Africans, this country is a better country than it was in 1994. Today we have progressive policies and legislation in place that have impacted positively in the lives of South Africans. Opportunities for economic inclusion and expansion, especially in the mining industry, have increased in the last 10 years of implementation of the Mining Charter. The Department is in the process of evaluating progress and compliance of the Mining Transformation Charter, and a report will be available by the end of this month, March 2015. We are also mindful of the challenges facing the country and the mining industry in particular due to volatile global economic situation. In the face of our democratic transition, therefore, we require bold and decisive steps that will place the economy on a path to prosperity and build sustainable livelihoods. The Department will continue to play an important part in ensuring that South Africans gain sustainable benefits from the country's natural wealth. This we will do by promoting and regulating the mining, minerals and upstream petroleum sectors in South Africa in order to inspire investment growth in the country. Peace and stability in the mining industry continues to be a priority for the Department. In this regard, we will continue to work through the presidency to implement a framework agreement for a sustainable mining industry. The security of energy supply in the light of the demand has galvanized the need for a diverse energy mix. Therefore, we will continue to promote, amongst others, the exploration of shale gas. We put in place the necessary legal framework to ensure that the exploration of the resources are taken in a responsible manner. This is also to ensure that the environment is protected for future generations. Working with other government departments and institutions will continue to promote normal and value addition, which benefits the nation to strengthen the interface between extractive industries and socio-economic development outlined in the ADP. As part of improving socio-economic conditions of mining towns, the department will implement projects outlined in the special presidential package on distressed mining towns in collaboration with other relevant departments. Members and colleagues, there has been some improvements with respect to safety on the mines. Those as well as health issues will remain a priority for the department. In this regard, we'll continuously monitor compliance and implement appropriate enforcement measures in terms of the law in order to safeguard the health and safety of mine workers and communities affected by mining activities. There are issues, colleagues, that have been in the public domain that we will not get into details with. Amongst them have got to do with what we've engaged Shell on the public announcements or perceived public announcements of pulling out of shale gas activities. We are engaging those and we're getting some different responses as we engage and we'll turn the updates, give updates as we continue. The other matter that we are engaged and seized with was the announcement by Optimum Coal on the retrenchment of about 1,000 workers. We are in the process of leading that process together with the CCMA, involving the Department of Labor, the unions to try and save jobs in that regard. One matter that I also think I must just give one update on is the issue of illegal mining that I'll come back to later, but also that the matter was raised in Parliament yesterday very sharply, correctly so, about the plight of ex-mine workers. I can confirm that our program relating to addressing this plight is rigorously continuing, and that over and above the one-stop service centers that are very active in the Eastern Cape and in the Gauteng and Carletonville, the Kimberley one opens from the 1st to 2nd of March. The Kimberley Hospital is put aside a section just to deal with the issues relating to the collection of data, the examination and rehabilitation of ex-mine workers. So we are appealing that if there are cases that come to your constituency, send them to us so that we can put them through the channels, because we are working together with the Department of Labor and the Department of Health to continue on this. In this year, we're planning to roll out two more centers, one in Kuruman, Northern Cape, and another one in Burgersfort in Limpopo. We have announced already that these centers will have to go across our borders because the type of ex-mine workers is very, has got to be addressed wherever we see it. We'll also continue to place great importance on the collaboration with all our stakeholders, as it is through working together that we can ultimately attain the goal of zero harm, that is in terms of the current mine workers who are also very important. The department will monitor the implementation of the new health and safety summit commitments. Honorable members, we continue to be greatly concerned regarding the health and safety of women workers in the mining sector. The department condemns the recent alleged rape of a female mine worker in Rustenburg at a mine's female changing house. The incident comes after the world's commemoration of the International Women's Day on the 8th of March 2015. We welcome the arrest of the suspects by the police who also allegedly threatened a second female worker. The department appeals to the sector to implement effective measures which will protect women against any form of violence. The strengthening of the minerals and upstream petroleum legislative framework will continue, and a proper process will be followed to address concerns raised about the aspects of the NPRDA amendment bill. The bill is currently, as you know, in the process of Parliament, and we're keenly awaiting that we should conclude this matter. We also commend for the implementation of an integrated licensing system in our quest to improve efficiencies and provide certainty around our regulatory framework. We will continue on the refinement of our regulatory framework together with the integration of ICT systems to make South Africa a competitive investment destination. As I draw to a conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, we also continue to collaborate with the respective stakeholders and law enforcement agencies in implementing measures to ensure that illegal mining activities are ultimately eradicated. In this regard, we welcome the and commend the recent confiscation of unprocessed gold worth about 20 million rands following coordinated raids by law enforcement agencies in Kurleni. And I can just assure you that more of such activities will be seen in times to come, in the near future, because there is a lot of work that has gone into this activity. However, we are greatly concerned with the incident of violence, violent crimes associated with illegal money, including murder as a result of rival gands competing for limited territory. Hence, the department, together with stakeholders, will continue with the implementation of the respective interventions, including sealing of holes and supporting the disruptive operation, of the police. Let's just give an indication here that part of this program is that it moves from area to area. As we continue to seal and close some holes, before they open, they fight for other holes to go into the illegal activities. So that's how it's getting transported. But we've already told this pattern, and I can just say that we confident to members that so far so good in this regard. But illegal mining on its own, it looks like it's a matter that we have to find other alternative engagement of those who are doing this illegal mining for economic activity. Chairperson, honorable members, would like to hand over to the DG to present the department's plan, where he will highlight critical issues that the department has been and will continue to engage with in and during this financial year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, honorable chairperson and honorable members of parliament. We have got the presentation there. The outline of the presentation shown there. The DM, when he was speaking, he did not even require this, except if we have to put this one much closer to your mouth, but I know you do have a voice.
Okay. Well, that's fine, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chairperson, we have got a presentation which we have prepared on our APT. The presentation is outlined, shown there. We will touch on mandate, the vision, the mission, and the values, the DMAR structure, offices of the department, strategic outcome-oriented goals, the organizational programs, the overview of the budget, and look at the various programs of the department, and then we will conclude the presentation. The mandate of the organization in terms of the constitution is derived from Section 24 of the Constitution, and the other part of the mandate, which is legislative mandate, is derived from two principal acts, that is the MPRDA and the Mine Health and Safety. Those are the two acts which actually drive the function of the department, which are basically can be split into two, which is mainly promotion of the industry and regulation of the industry. In terms of the vision, the 2030 vision is in line with the NDP. It's the leader in the transformation of South Africa through economic growth and sustainable development by 2030. We've got the vision which is shown there, which is to promote and regulate the minerals and mining sector for transformation, growth and development, and ensure that all South Africans derive sustainable benefits from the country's mineral wealth. We have values in the department which are outlined there. First one is people first, particularly. Then we've got ethics, honesty, integrity, accountability, professionalism, and Ubuntu. The slide shows the structure of the department. At the top there we have the ministry, and then we've got the Director General's Office, and we've got basically five branches, which is the Mineral Regulation Branch, which is headed by DDG, and Mineral Police and Promotion Branch, headed by the DDG, Chief Inspector of Mines, also the DDG 11, and then DDG Corporate Services and Chief Financial Officer. We have got offices throughout the country. We've got our head office in Pretoria, and in the provinces is the Cape, Free State, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Northwest, and Western Cape. So, in terms of our strategic outcome and our goals. Basically, we have got four strategic goals which have aligned also to our outcomes. We've got seven outcomes. The first strategic goal there is to increase investment in the minerals and mining and petroleum sector. And two outcomes have been identified there: decent employment through inclusive economic growth and efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network. The second strategic goal is transformed mineral sector, and the outcome there is decent employment through inclusive economic growth. The third strategic goal is equitable and sustainable benefit from mineral resources, and we have got three outcomes there: decent employment through inclusive economic growth and efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network, and environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. We have got the fourth strategic goal, which is efficient, effective and development-oriented partners. Under this, we have got efficient, effective and development-oriented public service and empowered, fair and inclusive citizenship. We, in terms of our organization environment, it shows our programs there. We've got the administration programs, one, and we've got the five sub-programs: the ministry, corporate services, department management, financial administration, and internal audit. We've got mine health and safety inspectorate as another program, which has got two sub-programs: mine health and safety, the governance policy and oversight. Then we've got the mineral regulation program, which has got two sub-programs, which are mineral regulation and administration, management, mineral regulation, which is another sub-program. Lastly, we've got the mineral policy and promotion, which has got four sub-programs, which is mining and mineral policy, mineral promotion, economic advisory services, and mine environmental management. The overview of the budget, the Auditor General did touch on it, but I will just highlight some of the issues there. We, as I said earlier, there were the four programs. If you look at the four programs, the last three columns of this slide show the medium-term expenditure estimates for the 2015-2016 financial year. The total amount in terms of the programs, total programs of the department will be 1.6 billion. And if you look at that column, Program 1 will be getting 293 million, Program 2, 175 million, Program 3, 260 million, and Program 4, 889 million. Then the subsequent years, that's 2016, 2017, 2018, are shown on slide the increase in terms of the budget. If you look at economic education, there's also an increase in terms of the total budget there, as shown there in the slide. The bottom part will be showing the total increase in terms of the budget in the department. The next slide will show the transfers, a very important part of our budget, because we play an oversight on state-owned entities. The first one is at the mine health and safety. We used to transfer some funds to them. However, for the next 3 years, no funding will be provided to them. National Treasurer looked at their finances and came to a conclusion that they can operate without getting funds, additional funds from the state. Minitech, very important research institution of the country in terms of mineral processing, they will continue to receive funding from the department, as indicated there. It will be 390 million for 2015-16, 311 million for 2016-17, and 299 million. The next institution which reports to the department is the South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator. They will also be getting funds from the department. Funds will be transferred to them as shown there for the next 3 years. Council for Geoscience, also a very important institution in terms of research, in terms of just geoscientific research. They play a critical role. I think earlier on in the discussion, the issue of of exploration in country was raised. And this institution is fundamental to that matter. And you can see there is a funding which will be provided for the institution to continue to do the required research, which is critical in terms of attracting investment into the mining industry and growing the future of the industry. But we also have another institution, the South African Diamond Trader. It's not indicated there. We play an oversight on it. It is not getting any funds from the department. The next slide shows expenditure analysis. The department received a baseline increase of 150 million rents over the NTF and a baseline reduction of 73.5 million, resulting in a net increase of 76.3 million over the MTF. If you look at unpicking this increase, 42 million rents was allocated to the department to enhance the enforcement of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development. This is around issues of inspectors, ensure that we can go out and ensure that there is compliance with regards to the law. Issues of ensuring that inspectors are out there, they can see what is happening, they interact with the mines and ensure that all operating mines in the country comply with the law. Another issue there is 108 million rand has been allocated for shale gas exploration, consultation, advocacy and research. This is extremely critical, but research here will be the main thing. We'll be doing a lot of research in this area. We'll be involving the Council for Justice, we'll involve PASA, we'll involve CSIR in terms of research, in terms of capacity building. So there will be quite a lot of work which will be undertaken here in terms of shale gas development. Look, next slide there. In terms of expenditure analysis, compensation of employees will represent 32.6% of the 2015-2016 total budget and 33.76% over the NTF. The Mineral Regulation and Mine Health and Safety Programs contribute about 58.9% of the total compensation of employees budget. That is where the activities of the department are in terms of people out there ensuring that the mining industry is properly regulated. We still have promotion, which is separate, but these two branches are so vital in terms of the interaction between the department and the mines. The higher contribution to compensation of mines is due to labor intensive nature of the inspection. They have to go out there and interact with the mines, as I said earlier on. The next slide, in terms of goods and services, will represent 17% of 2015-2016 total budget and 19.75% over the NTF. The main cost driver is subsistence and traveling, which constitute 82.50% of goods and services. This is followed by operating leases, which are at 17.99% of the total budget, and computer services, which represent 18.77% of the total budget for goods and services. In terms of transfers and subsidies, we contribute 49.5% of the 2015-2016 total budget, or 45.79 over the MTF, and 50.5 million under Program 3 is transferred to South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator, and 747 to Council for Geoscience. Mine Health and Safety Council did not receive allocation, as I said earlier on. In terms of capital expenditure represents a small percentage of the 2015-2016 budget, as shown there, 0.007% or 0.68% over the MTF period. And program which most utilizes capital expenditure is Program 1, which is administration in terms of the buildings, in terms of the IT systems. Majority of the items are machinery and equipment, which represents 74.76% of the total budget for capital assets, and those are computer hardware and systems, laptops and desktops. Buildings and other fixed structures will represent 35.34% of the total budget. we go now to program one. The purpose of this program is to provide provision of strategic support and management services to the ministry and the Department of Mineral Resources. The structure of this program has got the human resource management, legal services, communication, special projects and programs, auxiliary support, and security risk management. The strategic objectives, if you look at the strategic objectives for this program, the first one is to contribute to skills development. And we have actually unpacked this and looked at the performance measures which are captured in the APP. The first one there is our mining career awareness initiative, ensuring that people are aware of the careers, interacting with young people about the mining industry so that they can be attracted and enter this industry. Acquisition of bursaries for learners from poor backgrounds to study towards mining qualification is one activity which we continuously embark on in the department. Strategic objective, sustainable development of vulnerable groups. The performance in respect to this one is facilitation of projects for women, youth, and people with disabilities. If you look at other strategic objectives related to communication, DMR progress, and here we have got we will be implementing a DMR communication strategy. And the critical thing here is to ensure that the activities of the department are known by the people out there, by the people of South Africa, and the services which we offer are known. I mean, at the last committee meeting, the issue of SAMRA was presented here. We talked about increasing the footprint of the department. The strategy will actually help in realizing that objective. Strategic objective in terms of that, another strategic objective to provide adequate facilities for executive service delivery. Because this branch is basically providing that support for the department. It must ensure that facilities are there, head office. It must ensure that facilities are there in the provinces and interact with public works, ensuring that proper facilities are there for people to work and for the people of South Africa to be able to engage the department or to be able to be provided with the necessary services. The other strategic objective is to develop or review internal processes, guidelines, and procedures. This one, I won't get into the details, is all around ensuring that the branch provides effective and meaningful support to the whole department. Let's go on to the other strategic objective, is improve turnaround times. Also here, it's about service delivery. They have to ensure that they provide the necessary support and service delivery which is required. Strategic objective to implement national strategies. The critical one here is employee and contractor screening, vetting of employees, implement the gender equality strategic plan, and employee health, safety, and wellness program. With regards to the vetting, we ensure that all employees are vetted when they join the department, and all contractors must be vetted when they engage with the department. The next strategic objective is to comply with HR and occupational health and safety legislative framework. The performance measures there are human resource development plan and workplace skills plan updated and submitted timely. And also we must ensure that submission of financial disclosure are actually submitted timely. And performance agreements are developed and also signed timely. We follow up on these issues on an annual basis. The next strategic objective is to attract, develop, and retain skills. It's a very critical thing for the department, especially when it comes to the technical skills. I think in the past we did discuss this issue with the committee in respect of attracting suitable people to join the department. The first measure here is number of human resource development initiatives aligned with the national skills development strategy and maintaining vacancy rate at acceptable level and number of affirmative action measures implemented. Here we're saying that the department has transformed. but we find that we have got challenges, especially in attracting some designated groups, especially from colors, from Indians, disabled people. So we have to work hard to ensuring that that part is addressed. If you look at the financial administration program, they have a purpose there. The purpose of the program is to enable the department to deliver on its mandate by providing strategic management and administrative support to the ministry and the department. And if you look at the branch itself, it has got the finance and supply chain in it, it has got information management in it. If you look at the strategic objectives of this branch, is to provide efficient services to internal and external stakeholders, implement processes and systems, manage financial resources, and promote corporate governance. Then, if you look at the provide efficient services to internal and external customers, we have quite measured, we have got the measure in terms of systems availability. The IT belongs to this branch. So we have to ensure that we measure this issue of ensuring that the systems are available. They have to provide that system. Samrat is one of the systems which we gave them example. It must always be available. If people want to apply for rights in the department, that system must always be available. So we have to ensure that that is measured. Achievement of C-level agreement with internal stakeholders. This is about ensuring that, you know, there's productivity in that branch and ensuring that if they provide the necessary support which is required effectively. Improve stakeholder satisfaction, financial reports delivered on schedule, and supplier invoice paid within 30 days. This is very, very important to ensure that we support especially small businesses. And I think when it comes to that, the department has been doing quite well when it comes to paying suppliers within 3 days. Strategic objective to implement processes and systems. The performance measures may involve monitoring the alignment of information communication strategies to the strategic objectives of the department through master system plan. Here, we highlighted the issue of saying that, you know, we, as a department, we have realized that we need to address the whole IT systems in the department. And in this regard, we've already commenced with the integration of systems of the department. CSIR has already been brought on board to assist in this regard. And I can assure you, honorable members, this process is basically changing the department. We can see the results with Samrat, as I said earlier on, the other systems which will be integrating. At the end of it, when we look at the branches of the department, the information which is in mineral promotion should be able to be linked with information which is in mine health and safety. That information should be linked with information which is mineral regulation, because at the end, they are working around the same database, which are mines. So all these systems must be integrated. This is where we are driving the processes of IT system in the department. The other strategic objective is managing financial resources, budget monitoring mechanism to ensure a balance of not more than 2% against the budget. Very important. I think we have been doing it quite well in the department in the past years, and I want to continue to ensure that that is maintained. Preventative control to prevent and detect irregular expenditure. No irregular expenditure should be reported in the department. Earlier on, there was a discussion about irregular expenditure. Certainly, if there is irregular expenditure, we investigate that matter in the department. And if someone is found to have done something wrong, they have to pay. They have to pay. And there are instances where we have even taken this matter to the police. We have reported the cases to the police. So we take the issues quite serious in the department when it comes to issues of irregular expenditure. Asset life cycle management, no asset disposed of before the end of the cycle of our objectives. In terms of strategic objectives, in terms of promoting corporate governance, the critical issues there, some of them have been discussed by the Auditor General earlier on, the issues around internal and external audit management action plan. We have to implement those things because internal audit has got its own action plan, external audit has got its own action plan. So we have to implement that. There's also compliance framework which we have got to adhere to and risk mitigation strategies which we have to ensure that they are put in place in the department. If we move to Mine Health and Safety Peace Program 2, the purpose of this program is to execute the department mandate to safeguard health and safety of the mine workers and people affected by mining activity. The objective is to reduce mining-related deaths, injuries, the health through the formulation of national policy and legislation, the provision of advice, the application of systems that monitor, audit, and enforce compliance in the mining sector. The structure of the branch comprises two sub-programs, which is Mine Health and Safety, which basically is about the regions, the provinces where the inspectors are based there. Governance, policy, and oversight, they are mainly based in head office. With regards to mine health and safety regions, it is responsible for conducting audits, inspections, investigations, inquiries, enforcing Mine Health and Safety Act and its provisions, examination services, and providing professional advice. With regards to governance, policy, and oversight, it is responsible for governance, development of policies and legislation that enhance enforcement work, technical support of the regions, chairing of the tripartite structure, that is the Mine Qualification Authority, Mine Health and Safety Council, administration and issuing of government certificate of competency, and facilitation of HIV/AIDS work in the mining sector. One of the issues which they are actually involved in is the issue around ex-mine workers, which the Deputy Minister earlier on referred to. The strategic objectives have shown there are five of them there to promote health and safety, contribute to skills development, implement service level agreement, develop and review internal processes, and improve turnaround times. If you take the first strategic objective of promoting health and safety in the mining industry, there are performance measures there which have been captured there, and the percentage reduction in occupational fatalities and injuries is the first one there, and the target there is to reduce it by 20% per annum. Percentage reduction in occupational diseases is 10%. Percentage investigation and inquiries completed are looking at 8% per annum. These are the targets which we have put for the department to achieve. In terms of strategic objectives, the next page, promote health and safety. When it comes to performing measures there, we've got number of inspections conducted. Here we're looking at around 8,000 inspections which must be undertaken per year. Number of audits conducted, 396. Mine health and safety annual report must be produced by this branch. Number of tripartite workshops conducted, we also have measures for that. When it comes to strategic objectives, number two is to contribute to skills development. The performance measure there is to implement certificates of competency model to improve pass rate. The pass rate there has always been quite low when it comes to this matter, especially for previously disadvantaged people there. So we want to improve this pass rate. Collaborate with Department of Higher Education and Training and other stakeholders from Mining Qualification Authority to ensure implementation of skills development program is another measure there. We look at the strategic objectives relating to implementing service level agreements. First one there is performance measurements with regards to percentage adherence to service level agreement. We're saying that it should be at 100%, develop and review internal processes. Also, as a strategic objective, it has got its own performance measures, then the percentage of identified internal processes developed, implemented, and reviewed. When it comes to strategic objective of improved turnaround times, we have identified a number of performance measures there. I won't go into detail there in terms of them, but we have got targets for those measures. And the other issue here is you know, in terms of our work, we have to implement mine health and safety summit outcomes. On the 8th and 19th of November 2014 last year, mine health and safety summit was held. In fact, that summit drives the activities of the sprints, because they, together with mine health and safety, they have to work in ensuring that we achieve the outcomes of the summit. We identified milestones at that summit, and we identified commitments and milestones. The commitments have been shown there on the next slide, slide 43. Those are the commitments which came out of mine health and safety. This elimination of fatalities and injuries, rehabilitation of mine workers injured in the line of duty, elimination of occupational lung diseases, elimination of noise-induced hearing losses, reduction of prevention of TB, etc., integrate and simplify compensation system, implementation of approved culture transformation framework, including on women in mining concerns, launch and implement the Center of Excellence, which will focus on research and capacity building. This basically sums the key activities of this branch going forward. And we have got milestones for this commitment. The Center of Excellence has already been launched, which is a big achievement, and it will contribute significantly in terms of improving mine health and safety in the mining industry. The next slide is just to show you those commitments. As we implement, we want to improve on what we have already achieved. And if you look at slide 44, when it comes to pulmonary tuberculosis, if you look there, you can see there's a downward trend, in terms of pulmonary tuberculosis. And we are quite certain that if we implement those commitments, this downward trend will continue. Silicosis, similarly, there is a downward trend. We must work hard on it. It's not an easy one, but we think that if we implement those commitments, this will be achieved. When it comes to noise-induced hearing also, if you put a trend there, you will clearly see that there is a downward trend when it comes to issues of noise-induced hearing losses. And we strive to ensure that the downward trend continues. When it comes to fatalities by commodities, this shows what has happened since the introduction of Mine Health and Safety Act. There's a significant improvement with regards to fatalities, and you can see that downward trend. The fatalities are now below 100, and we will continue to ensure that this downward trend is maintained. Look at improvement when it comes to coal mines, shown at 90%, coal mines 90%, all mines at 86%. I think this is demonstrating that, you know, the efforts which we put through, especially through inspections play a major role. I know sometimes you find that these companies are upset by certain interventions, especially Section 54, you've been hearing about it, but we believe that, you know, we have really made a change by putting those interventions. They are critical in terms of saving the lives of people. They are critical in terms of ensuring that people work in a healthy environment. And I think the trend speaks for themselves. If you go to this slide, we thought that we need to share this with you. You see, where are we now? We just talked about 2014. We talked about where we were going in terms of our commitments which came out of our summit. Now we're saying, where are we in the last 3 months? Okay. And this now shows where we are. If you look at the table there, in terms of fatalities, it's clearly an improvement compared to last year, the first 3 months last year, and now this year. There is improvement, 2010. Next slide. Also here, in terms of occupational safety, the injuries there, you can see that there is an improvement during this current calendar year, Next one. Now let's move on to general regulation. The purpose of this branch is to regulate the minerals and mining sector to ensure economic development, employment, and ensure transformation and environmental compliance. And the objective is to transform the minerals and mining sector into one that competitively contributes to the sustainable development in the country. Strategic objectives are shown there to promote job creation, promote sustainable resource use and management, reduce state environmental liability and financial risk, implement transformation policies, monitor and enforce compliance, and improve turnaround times. If you look in terms of promotion of job creation, we have got the performance measures which we have put there, the number of social and labor plan development projects, the number of black industries created, number of jobs created through mining. The next strategic objective is to promote sustainable resource use and management. We have got also a number of measures which we have put there. We're going to look at issues of evaluating work program, considering the elements of sustainable development. We get approved social and labor plan relative to rights issued, considering the element of sustainable development, and issues around granting environmental authorization relative to rights issued, and considering the elements of sustainable development. When it comes to reducing state environmental liability and financial risk, we are looking at percentage of statutory notice orders issued to remedy inadequate financial provisions, percentage of closure certificates issued in line with the regulatory framework. Strategic objectives in terms of implementing transformation policies, the number of rights and payments granted or issued to historically disadvantaged South Africans and controlled entities, number of consultation engagements and conflict management with community stakeholders and the mining industry, and number of industry workshops conducted. We believe, you know, here around interacting with the communities there, ensuring that we are in touch with what is happening with regards to issues related to mining and community. The next strategic objective is to monitor and enforce compliance here. The performance measures are to achieve compliance with regulatory requirements through verification inspection, implement enforcement procedures to collect prospective fees that are in areas, and new revenue system is being implemented. I think the Auditor General's office has actually highlighted on this issue of revenue. Certainly, in the past, it was a challenge in the department, and what we have done here now, we have currently deploying a revenue system which will be addressing these issues of revenue, so that we can account when it comes to issues of revenue in the department. We hope this will solve the matter once and for all. Strategic objective to improve turnaround times. Here is about percentage adherence to prescribed time frames for prospecting and mining rights application. Importantly, implementing the streamlining license system for mining, environment, and water authorization. The Deputy Minister has already highlighted this issue. It will be one of our key programs this coming financial year to ensure that system is effectively implemented and improved service delivery. We have implemented it since the 8th of December last year. When it comes to mineral policy and promotion, the purpose here is to formulate mineral-related policies and promote the mining minerals industry of South Africa, making it attractive to investors. The objective, through research, provide relevant information to enhance global competitiveness, review policies and formulate legislation to achieve transformation and attract new investment into South Africa's mineral industry. In terms of the strategic objectives there is to promote investment in the mining sector, promote sustainable resources and management, facilitate transformation in the mining sector, develop and review internal processes, and improve turnaround times. When it comes to promotion of investment in the mining and upstream petroleum sector, we're looking at issues of technical and promotional publication. This branch has got, they've got mineral economics. So they have got to produce publications informing the public out there about developments in the mining industry, the trends which are happening there. They must publish. There is an annual publication which they produce called the South African Mineral Industries. In fact, once you get the publication, you've got understanding of what is happening in the mining industry of South Africa. So this is the key function. Technical and strategic partnership, they must ensure that there are strong partnerships, especially with our associated institutions, because you can't promote the mining industry if you don't strongly link your activities with the associated institution, especially NAMTEC and the Council for Social Science. They have got to be, you know, friends. They work very closely with the Council for Social Science. They work very closely with NAMTEC in terms of ensuring that we promote the mining industry of South Africa. The support for SMEs in mining, engagement with coal stakeholders is a critical issue that has already started. In fact, the engagement with coal stakeholders has started. Task team has already been established whereby issues relating to coal industry are being discussed. Implementation of pushing economy operation particular action plan is an important program which was launched by the president. We are advising some of the one of the initiatives which is there, which is the offshore oil and gas initiative there. We are responsible for that. We've got an action plan and we are implementing that action plan. We've created a unit in a department which is working on the implementation of this action plan. Report on implementation of beneficiation framework and promotional activities here and work very closely with DTI when it comes to these issues of beneficiation. Strategic objective, promote investment in the mining and upstream petroleum sector. Here we're going to be performance measures, social dialogues and with social partners. Report on strategic minerals and develop consultation, promotional activities and monitoring on shale gas exploration. Report on intervention to facilitate strategic participation in mining and upstream petroleum development. This just highlights some of the critical areas which they will be involved in as a branch. When it comes to promotion of sustainable resource management, the performance measures say technical partnership with SOEs, develop a coal policy framework for mine environmental management, rehabilitation of derelict and ownerless mines, revised mining strategy for sustainable growth and meaningful transformation. Issue of derelict and ownerless mines was discussed earlier. Certainly it is an issue that we have got targets for that in terms of rehabilitation of those mines, but we have prioritized those ones which poses danger to the society, especially the asbestos ones, which are prioritized. And we utilize the Council for Social Science and NAMTEC to assist us in terms of these programs. NAMTEC mainly focuses on the large ones, while Council for Social Science focuses on the smaller size. The next one is strategic objective to facilitate transformation in the mineral sector. Report on the impact of policy on investment and review policy regulation. They do a lot of economic analysis, so that is very critical in terms of ensuring that they provide such information for us. The other strategic objective is to develop and review internal processes. Here we'll be looking at review of internal business processes to improve efficiency. And strategic objective is to improve turnaround times. And the strategic objective on improving turnaround times is about this performance measure adhering to prescribed templates. We thought we need to share with you this chart, a very important chart in terms of understanding, because this branch is involved in promotion of the mineral industry of South Africa. So we need to look at, you know, what impact do they have. If you look at this graph, we can see that, you know, at the time when the NPRDA was implemented, there was a downward trend in terms of employment, and that changed the situation. And there's this upward trend, which we can see there. It's very important thing. We saw the same thing with regards to mine health and safety. The Mine Health and Safety Act was implemented, things changed. And you can see the NPRDA has actually turned around the situation by opening up mines, especially in the platinum a sector there. You can see that the platinum, if you look at that, the dark bluish color, you can see that there's an upward trend there. Coal industry, there's a marginal upward trend. But at the end, you can see that there is an upward trend when it comes to employment in this sector. Next one also, if you look at this one, it shows performance in terms of sales. There is also an upward trend, which you can see in terms of the total sales. The green chart there shows the total sales in terms of the sales of South Africa's minerals. And I think as we drive the promotion of this sector, we will be focusing on job creation. We need to see that curve, that positive upward trend. Continuing, yes, it's not going to be a straight curve. Okay? It's cyclical. There are challenges here and here. For instance, if you look at this curve, you can see the 2008 financial challenges which affected the world also affected us. Okay, in 2014, the other issue which will be coming in there, it will be the issue of the depressed commodity prices. They will actually affect us. We are not immune from those international or the global challenges. But at the end of it, despite the cyclical nature of this environment, we have got to continually strive and say we have to have an upward trend. So when it comes to mine health and safety, we have to have downward trend, and we can see it there. When it comes to a promotion of the mining industry, we have to strive for an upward trend. It is not easy. As I said, it needs us to work together, especially the department working together with MINTEC. MINTEC is very critical in terms of opening up ores which cannot be processed easily, because they are involved in mineral research. So funding of MINTEC is extremely important. Council for Geoscience, we have got to work together. Without those two institutions, we are not going to drive the industry properly, and the growth will won't occur as we like to see. So all what I'm trying to say is we are seeing this trend. The mine health and safety, there is a positive trend, and in terms of promotion, there is this positive trend. We need to continuously ensure that we drive this positive trend, even if sometime we might have some dips, but at the end of it, as a country, that's where we should go. In conclusion, the department is committed to continue with the journey of good financial management, which we are striving hard, you know, working together with the Auditor General. We will continue to ensure that we implement the issue of good financial management and also implement the APP accordingly. We will be available to provide information to the honorable members whenever they need that information. In the implementation of APP, we will continue to work with stakeholders to ensure that this APP is implemented effectively. I thank you.
Thank you very much. There is the presentation, and let's take questions of clarity, and we will go to what honorable members would prefer to make as views or recommendation. But if you feel you want to go for both, it's okay. Honorable Norima, let me look in your faces. I know you. Honorable Nyambi, you see, Honorable Mandela, I told you when we were doing chat, once you start to do this, you will remind me one old man who was chairing a meeting. Now he looked at this guy, this old man, and said, why are you looking at me this way? And he was speaking in Xhosa. Then this old man says, no, I'm for no, I'm the link to engage. ngoba ndijongintshebe leya kumbuzwa kabebhokhwe yasekhayaandifuni honorable Mandela. Okay, the chief of the Israel.
Mr. Chair, you got to get it right. Sam Campbell. First of all, Deputy Minister, the Minister has said that he hopes the NPRDA can be reprocessed by the middle of the year. Do you still believe that this is possible? And as a subsidiary to that, what, if any, proactive steps is the Department taking to change the position of oil and gas as currently stands in the bill that was passed by Parliament? Second issue, Deputy Minister, you talked about some pending retrenchments at Optimum Coal. Could you tell us how many jobs are threatened? And then in the context of the new Largo colliery, which has been very late, this is the colliery that's supposed to supply Kusile Power Station, it's been very late in getting off the ground, because Eskom has been insisting that Optimum Coal Coal's BEE percentage of 27% is not sufficient. It only wants to do business with coal suppliers who are 51% BEE owned. I want to know whether that delay in New Largo is possibly one of the reasons that these jobs are threatened. Again, as a substitute to that, I'd like to know whether the department has engaged with Eskom on its insistence that its coal suppliers be 51% BEE owned. Moving on then to shale gas, Minister, could you tell us when we will see those shale gas regulations? We've been told a number of times that they're about to be released, that they still haven't come. And then finally, Deputy Minister, are you planning legislative changes to assist with the prosecution of illegal miners? Do you think those changes would be necessary or helpful? Moving on to the DG's presentation. I see on page 13 there is a new allocation of money for shale gas exploration. You talk about for consultations, advocacy and research, but I don't see any more funding for oversight. I know that later on in mineral regulations you do talk about oversight of shale gas, but I want to know what kind of funding is going towards that. Is it within the capability of the department, or are we going to need additional resources to do that? Second question, I'd just be interested to know whether you keep a register of this, but could you tell me, DG, how many employees of your department hold mining or prospecting rights? I'm interested to know. Then on page 53, you talk about strategic objective being the number of black industrialists created through procurement. I just want to note that I have a fundamental disagreement with your emphasis here. I think the emphasis should be on jobs created, not on members of the elite who are empowered. Moving on to page 66. Yes, okay. I also disagree with your analysis here. You say that you think that it was the passing of the NPRDA which led to an upward turn in mining. I think that's probably wrong, and that the reason there was an upward turn in mining after the NPRDA was passed is because it ended the uncertainty that prevailed in the mining industry, which had been one of the major reasons for the decline in mining. When that uncertainty ended, mining picked up again. And I am, just as a comment, concerned at the moment that the current uncertainty in the mining industry is going to lead to another downturn in the industry. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Sen. Some of the questions have been sent by my colleague there. But I just want to ask on page 7, Dr. Sen, in terms of the office, how possible it is that we have satellite offices so that it can be nearer to the people. Looking at these offices are very far, but we appreciate that we do have these offices. The same question, Chairperson. The department is talking about promoting health and safety in mines. What is the program of the department to ensure that the inspections that are talking about in page 38 have to be conducted correctly? Do we have maybe a number of people that are in place or in addition doing the safety and health programs? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Let me appreciate the presentation by the DM as well as the DG of the department. I'd like to gain clarity on a few issues. The DM talks about the issue of job losses in terms of the mine mentioned. But here on slide 52, we're talking about promoting job creation. So how are we contradicting ourselves that we are continuously experiencing job losses, yet our aim and target is to create jobs. Second to that question, the Deputy Minister is alluded that in terms of the ex-mine workers clinics, they are building another one in Uruma and in Beggarsford. But if memory serves me correct, Jefferson, one, if you look at the one in Uruma, which is in the Northern Cape, Northern Cape only amounts to 1% of ex-mine workers in the country, whereas a province like the Northwest accounts for 18% of ex-mine workers. Therefore, how are we doing the selection criteria in terms of placement of these ex-mine workers clinics? Because I think there are provinces that are really in need of this, because of the vast population of ex-mine workers that they have in their areas. So I'd like to understand the selection criteria in that, Chairperson. If I may come, Chairperson, to the slide 44-45, I'm rather concerned about the diseases that we see emanating or challenging mine workers. And I think it's been the department's priority to ensure that we decrease these challenges. But if I look at the for one on silicosis from 2011 to 2013, it seems like it's rising in gold mines from 1,095 to 1,115 to 1,164. And if you really scrutinize this, you'd see that that is an upward trend. If you look at coal, it's 2, the other one, 2012, it's 5, 2013, it's 18, so we are on the rise. But tuberculosis as well, if you look through the documents there, you would find that it's an ongoing. If you look at 2011, the total there was 3,062, but in 2013, we're already sitting at 3,255. I'm rather concerned in terms of the mechanisms that are in place to regulate mine health and safety. Are we seeing the increase in these areas? Thank you, sir.
Okay. You wanna respond before I put you more in?
Chair, let's reduce the burden.
Okay.
I think let me welcome the comments and questions from members. Maybe I should start from the end. Dr. Mandela. The issue, I think, relating to the rise in
mine-related diseases like TB, silicosis, etc. I think the inspector of mine here cannot comment on that. But let me talk about this TB one. We are going to see more increase because we are going to go specifically in three areas. The area of mining itself, the current miners, and the ex-miners. So you might just use trends because our rate and our intensity of examination has increased. And you know that when it comes to TB, Dr. Motsoaledi, the chairperson of the Stop Partnership, Stop TB Partnership globally, and we have agreed that he will be announcing maybe in the next few months the general examination of mine workers and mining communities. We've already started with the gene expert machines in the prisons. So that trend itself, because the TB in mines and those areas, and especially also not just in South Africa, in the whole of the BRICS countries is actually very high. And that's why we've got to defeat it. So I'm just saying that as we do the intense examination of this, we will see more. Because it's a matter that we have to look into. But as to the trends of increase and so on, then I think the more details of psychosis as well will be given. And as we talk about ex-mine workers in the clinics, these are interventions for now, but even long term we have to integrate these matters into the national health system of the country. Currently hospitals don't have the equipment that can detect mine-related diseases. When you go there with silicosis, they will tell you you've got TB or flu or something else. So there is interventions and ensuring that these ones of centers, they've got the state-of-the-art equipment that can detect TB, silicosis, asbestosis, etc., etc., etc. Now, in terms of the location, this thing is informed by the burden of disease, not the number of months. For instance, let's talk about, we started in the Eastern Cape because the majority of people that were on our database are from the Eastern Cape. And when we did some sort of engagement on this matter, that's where our priority was. Next to Nelson Mandela Hospital, there we've got the center clinic that we talk about that we call the Wasp Service Center, because it's not just about clinic. It deals with a whole range of issues. One of the limitations is that as a country, we don't have a central base that we're trying to have that's coordinated properly of all ex-mine workers, because you've got one database within TERRA, you've got others in other institutions, other Department of Health, Department of Labor, the department. So we try to centralize this so we can know each and every ex-mine workers where they are and how their conditions are. So it's a process of data engagement. The second one, the law provides that every ex-mine worker is entitled to a free medical benefit examination every 2 years. And that's why we're working together with the Department of Health, Department of Labor, to ensure that we do all these things. So part of this other section, other administration, is to do all the examinations on our mine worker. What me and you do, we go to the hospital or clinic every 2 years or 1 year to do ECGs and all that. They've got it free of charge in terms of the law. So that's what we have been advocating, go from area to area to say to mine workers, ex-mine workers, go to the nearest clinic, and where there is no clinic, that's where the interventions are going. Having said that, after that, Gauteng has also been having a lot of ex-mine workers in the Gauteng province. The Northern Cape might be small in percentage, but the burden of people who are in the Kuruman area, you recall that Kuruman itself has been part of the North Coast province. So the majority of people who came from the mines in those areas as well are from Kuruman. So that's why this clinic is important in that area. And we've got over 33 mines in that area that have employed and still employing people. But we've also noted that the bulk of people from the Kuruman Tawi area are in this place. And the asbestosis problems are in Kuruman and Bilderswart area, where there were the asbestos mines. That's why the clinics have got to be prioritized in those areas. They're not rolled out yet. It's a problem that we working with the Department of Health with, because we've got to put this next hospital. You can't just put just the as a standalone, because if somebody goes there, they look into their situation and there are other opportunistic diseases that are there. You've got to have a total examination of the ex-mine worker there. So that's where we are going to be practicing this year, those two clinics or one-stop centers in Kuruman and in Bilderswart in Limpopo. Also, Bilderswart, also the number of mines that have been there for a long time, and the burden of disease is very low. We are going to go over the borders. We have already had meetings with the ministers of health, the ministers, the treasury, the ministers of finance from other countries, with our own ministers here. And this agreement that we have to roll out this, as we try and catch the situation of ex-mine workers who were working in this country and they went to their own residences and so on. The promotion of job losses, I think maybe that believes that it's easy to respond to. These are the job losses that they're having. Just to say that, you know, mining is a wasting asset. You know, there are times that it's a wasting asset first, and when the commodity prices also start behaving otherwise, we can see other patterns in mining. So they are not, my jobs in mines are not static. They will change from time to time. Without getting into a lot of details, the DG might just want to talk about the direct question. And the issue relating to officers and satellite officers, I will also leave that to the DG to respond. I think it was Mr. Lorimer, Mr. Lorimer who raised the other questions relating to the jobs in mining and the increase in mining from 2004, whether it was a result of the MPRDA or uncertainties, etc. I think it's also factually that there has been increase, both in jobs and in mines. For instance, in 1994, we had under 800 mines inquiries in the country. Now we're talking close to 1,700. So there has been an increase. And jobs as well, you'll see what has happened in the platform sector as well. And other sectors, there has been some increase. Now, whether it's uncertainties or what, it's a philosophical, political question that me and you can answer. I will argue that this has happened because since 2002 and implementation of the MPRDA, in 2004, there has been absolute certainty in the mining industry. The MPRDA has been a solid piece of legislation for the past 10 years at least, and there has not been changes. So the whole thing that is branded about by people that we have had public engagements with, that, you know, many sectors in South Africa is the most uncertain. We've been given evidence, you see, and no evidence has been forthcoming. And that's why I'm saying this one is a political matter that we've got to engage to agree or disagree. But the facts are very stubborn. Increases have been there. Nobody can dispute that. But you attribute that to, I'll attribute it to other matters that has got to do with this government that has implemented this transformation laws. And that's where we are. It's only now, 10 years later, that we come to a point where we've got to look into the amendments of the MPRDA. That's where we are at the moment. So, uncertainties are matters that we can deal with. We want certainty in the sector, and we're going to continue to try and do that. The other matter that you're raising, Honorable Lorimer, relates to the question of the employees having mining prospectus rights. I am not even aware that we do have such employees, but the DG can answer that. Industrialists versus shops, what does that mean? What does that mean? I'm not asking a question, I'm just saying, what does that mean? We've got to have both in this country. We're striving to ensure that we increase the number of jobs in the economy. And that's what we're going to do consistently, despite what is happening around us. Because the economic situation of South Africa will always be affected by externalities because of, we are an open economy. We are affected by what is happening with commodity prices, commodity prices, and also other factors that we wanted to go to. But we're going to continue to create industrialists in this country, in all sectors, including mining. So we're not going to be apologetic about this one. I know that when it comes to the mining charter, we might have had some unintended consequences of having more individuals benefiting other broad-based. And that we learn from those lessons of history, we've got to broaden as we're going. The companies in this country were broadened to a point where you can see communities, workers, and other people benefiting. But it's not either or, it's actually both. The issue relating to ESCOM, unfortunately I cannot answer for ESCOM, but yes, we do engage with our colleagues about some of their policies of promoting black industrialists. It is clear that it's also a matter where ESCOM has said at some point they will give priority to those who are 51% PE and so on. So I think it's a matter that you might want to engage in the particular sector. CAMNET cannot answer for them, so. And for whether optimum, as you know, retrenchment has got to do with this, I didn't know. One of our colleagues here has been part of the engagement and involvement, maybe she can do the DGG manual regulation, in what the discussions are within optimum, where the number of jobs that, the permanent jobs are about 1,000 jobs that are under threat, and the contractors, I think, is about 500. So we take that seriously. We know that this is not our first engagement. When the problems in the mining sector, that's how MIG that came about, to be able to come around the table and say, how do we save jobs? So that has been the problem that we are busy with, nothing new. So we are going to do this as we did in the transport sector as well, as we, and so on and so on. So let me leave this at that one. The issue about the proposed the law, frankly, the ball is in your court. This matter is with Parliament. The question of the return of the MPRDA amendments, the President sent it to Parliament. So we are hopeful, and I concur with the Minister, that it is possible to do some of the issues, that because the President has raised two or three matters. One matter relates to substantive constitutional issues, and the second matter is our procedural matters of consultation and other matters related. So Parliament's program and the committees that this thing has been referred to, then this committee, and for instance the committee, the NCOP, are the ones who determine the pace and speed at which we finalize this law. So unfortunately this question has got to be answered by this committee in terms of how long it will take. We are hoping that we are able to finish this by June this year. We've just been hopeful. But if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, we'll have to be guided by your activities in this one. The oil and gas change, there has been, the Minister has been consulting on this one, and I can just say that at some stage, there was this matter of separating the gas and oil and so on. In principle, yes, that's what the Minister said, that's ideal, but we don't want to delay Rosberg. You see, because the President sent it back to you on only two or three matters. So a process got to be, we've got to allow this process of Parliament to finish, and maybe have a process that deals with the separation. But in terms of the context and the content and the provisions of the law, we'll have to implement that is in the bill currently, if it's allowed, if it's assented to by the President. So I think I must leave it at that. The issue of about the legislation, maybe the Minister, you can just update the committee as well on the strengthening of the legal instruments that deals with illegal miners, because there are fora where these matters are discussed, but unfortunately this is not within our purview. This is the justice cluster that has got to do with fines and how you deal with this. Now, my opinion is that, yes, we've got to strengthen the part, but that's one part where you catch somebody who, this thing is very syndicated, Baba. There are some people sitting outside of the borders of South Africa who are pumping a lot of money in all systems to ensure that this illegal mining strives. That's why we as much as we can contain it at this level, we've got to go for the big fish here, the puppet master who's sitting somewhere in London and dumping a lot of pounds here for people to do this illegal mining. That's why some two weeks ago we arrested some of the kingpins. We're going to do that. I'm promising this one that we're going to continue, and in recent times we are going to see more of these ones. Very determined to do it. But the loss in terms of whether it's possession of illegal gold or whatever you do, the small fish, we are going to continue to dissuade our people from illegal activity, because it's also dangerous. But we've got to deal with the kingpins of the syndicate. Tell me that. DJ.
Thank you, Akin. And once again, Honorable Chairperson and members, good day. Just to support what the DM has indicated with this, the last issue of the legislation on legal mining, as a department we've gotten a legal opinion through the state law advisors on where each part of the legislation that we have to consider. They suggested the MPRDA, because the current section which deals with the licensing party does not deal with this phenomenon of illegal mining. So it's something that we're going to look at. And also, as Jim indicated, the other departments and law enforcement that we are collaborating with, because there is a task team that comes together. They are looking at all the different legislation, including the use of mercury, because we've been told that they use mercury, you know, the issue of possession as well, because some of the legal minors, when they get caught, they just leave the stuff there that the police are not have evidence. So we are also looking. So we are also looking at all the respective legislation. Now, coming on the issue of the diseases, Honorable Mandela, we also agree that in terms, although there's been improvement, the challenges on health they're still immense. If I can give the fact, in 2003 there used to be 18,300 cases reported overall of occupational diseases. 2013 there were 6,800 reported. Although there's a significant reduction, right, but the numbers are still high. The challenge with health is the latent effect. With health compared to safety, with health you see after 10 years, 20 years, that someone has diseases. With safety, there's a hopeful now someone gets injured. The difference with silicosis and TB, with TB you can get medication now and can get better. But with silicosis, it's irreversible. So that's why we always, as a department and also as a sector, when we deal with both health and safety, we have to look at the lead and the lag indicators. The lead is the exposure levels, let's say, on health, on dust, for instance, whether we're improving there. We are confident that there's improvement there. The lags are the diseases as well. The lags, we also look at the number of people who lose their lives as a result of respiratory diseases. We are seeing improvement there. In 2003, there were about 1,000 cases reported to the Department of Health, and it went down to about 300 in 2003. The numbers are still high, but we are working together with the sector in dealing with that. And we also welcome the President's initiative on the framework agreement, because it's looking at the living conditions of workers. One of the things that highly affects the issue of TB is living conditions. The hostels as well, the mining charter, since the mining charter was introduced, we've seen better living conditions, and this process that is introduced by the President as well. We think by improving the living conditions, we'll see a significant impact on TB as well as HIV and AIDS, because HIV and AIDS affects the number of TB cases. In terms of regarding the infection, we have, as DG indicated earlier, we have regional offices, 10 regional offices. Depending on the size of the region and the level of risk as well, we have a number of inspectors that also do inspections and audits in those mines. And the proactive way that they do, we believe, is resulting in positive outcomes on both health and safety. So we do have people in the different regions. So we have one Rustenburg Klerksdorp office, Bramfontein, the Kimberley, Northern Cape, and so forth. So we do have inspectors in the regions as well who presently do inspections and audit. I think you teach it, that's it.
Or you have mandated every person, you are satisfied for
the DG, if you can just amplify the call one with the DTG, then the DG can summarize. The DG takes the difficult ones.
Can you do the summary? Sorry. It must be equal to 5.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The process of engaging with the parties to save the jobs, this is in respect to optimum coal mine, is ongoing. And this involves the participation of the CCMA, Department of Labor, Productivity SA, mine itself, as well as all the registered unions at the mine. There is a meeting that will be held tomorrow with all the parties as part of Section 52 process, and once that is concluded, an outcome would be very clear. But I will need to emphasize, as the Deputy Minister and the DG indicating, that the intention is to save the jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think the DM has touched on the issues of the NPRDA, and that the NPRDA itself is with Parliament currently. And on the issue of just to add on the issue of optimum, there was a question about how many jobs are at stake. There's 1,000 jobs which are permanent and 500 jobs which are contract jobs. That's the situation there. And on the issue of shale gas, the appropriation there, in terms of oversight work, the oversight there, I mean, I think what you are saying, you are referring to inspections and all those things. Yes, currently inspections are undertaken in terms of oil and gas, are undertaken by BARF, Petroleum Agency of South Africa. But there is a process of streamlining the whole issues of oil and gas in terms of Operation Pakiza. If you look at the outcomes of Operation Pakiza, one of the outcomes there is that the Petroleum Agency of South Africa should be moved to the department and basically report to the department. That's part of the outcomes of Operation Pakiza. So that will be integrated. Their funding and everything will be looked at in terms of that. So it's not a chance there. But the bulk of the money, as I said, it will be focusing on undertaking research. I think it's so critical, you know. Undertaking research, looking at issues around the environment, and even looking at other shale gas horizons which have not been discovered, you know. So it is about ensuring that the whole country, we look at the whole country, we look at research when it comes to oil and gas. And as I said, geological institutions will be critical when it comes to that, or institutions which have got geological competencies will play a role, you know, CGS, Carbon Science, CFIR, and the Petroleum Agency of South Africa will play a major role when it comes to issues of shale gas. In fact, when you refer to the issues of regulation, these institutions have played a critical role in developing this regulation. If you remember where we come from in terms of regulation, that the first time that this country had to develop regulation from scratch. And I've seen, you know, when we started and where we are now. That document which has been released, very few people have criticized it, the draft document. There's a draft regulations which have been released. We've got feedback from oil companies. We've got, you know, feedback from many stakeholders. People are quite comfortable with the document which is already there. Okay. And the main intention is to ensure that we protect the environment and ensure that as we exploit this resource, the environment is actually also protected. And in this regard, okay, we will be doing consultation with, you know, communities in those affected areas. That will be the last link of this process of shale gas regulation. And once that those consultations are made, we will then release the regulation. We have engaged with, we have received, in fact, submissions from a number of stakeholders, oil companies. We've incorporated those submissions there, and we're quite comfortable. Some of our staff members, especially from PASA, they've gone abroad, they've looked at what is happening abroad there. And I think we're very strong. There is a team which is working on this matter, interdepartmental team with all other affected departments apart from this process. And I think we have produced a very solid document. Very few countries can actually produce something like that. I think it's empowering the top countries which are involved in shale and gas when it comes to this matter. The issue of employees who hold mining rights and prospecting rights, I don't know of any. Maybe in my knowledge, I don't know of any who holds a mining right and a prospecting right. And then the issue of, I think, referred to the issue of the jobs which have been lost currently. The mining industry, as I said earlier on, is a very cyclical industry. Okay. It's, I mean, look at what happened in 2008. Even in the around 1997-1998, there was a gold crisis, was there. 2008, there were challenges. Now we're facing another challenge. So there will always be a situation whereby jobs are shared when the economic circumstances are not favorable. Like now, what we're facing now is the depressed commodity prices, from oil prices, the white law, we all know about the coal prices, the iron ore prices, you know, the commodity prices are low. And that creates challenges in terms of operations. But I think, as I said earlier, at the end of it, we as a country, we need to look at the long-term vision of the industry and say, let's ensure that we grow the industry. Let's ensure that we create jobs in the industry. Short-term, there will be these challenges. Like we're seeing now, there are challenges. We need to intervene. The measures which we have put in place, engaging the various stakeholders, is so critical. The DDG is sitting tomorrow and being with them, you know, engaging them only to see if we can find ways of saving jobs. And also the other issue which they will be looking at is providing portable skills for people. So we engage on this issue to address this issue of challenges which the industry is facing.
There was one relating to satellite offices.
Okay, the satellite offices, as a department, we'd like to really, you know, expand our footprint across the country. And our last committee meeting engagement, we talked about what we'll be doing, okay, is to ensure that we go out now to the people. We go out there, we hold workshops with people, so that we can actually inform them about the services which we are providing as a department. We'll also, you know, partner with relevant institutions. We're looking at maybe, you know, we are going to explore this one. We're looking at partnering with other departments which have got offices in other areas where we don't have. I think we can find synergies there and provide our services through those departments or some institutions. I think look at maybe the post office is feasible and see if we cannot work with them. We agree that we need to do something in terms of expanding our footprint. Yeah. I think Jim, you've covered.
Okay, Nathan. You tried. Before I go, probably there will be. Look, I think the first issue, before I don't get my opportunity from the chair, is that probably in the report that we have compiled, from the oversight in the Eastern Cape, we'll have to look on the issue of the service centers for ex-mine workers. I don't think now, we're not sure to what extent it will have financial implications in the entire process, but the observation that we have had is that first as an intention is a good intention. But it has got serious challenges that if it are not attended to, they may turn the good intentions into potential, if I may to use, failures of the system. So, and I think to some extent we have agreed that it's an issue that we might need more of an intense discussion, including involving the Department of Health, but also on the issue of this separate funds that are sitting there in terms of for compensation purposes that are sitting in different areas. So I'm saying that issue, we took note of the all good intentions around it. The second one, DT, is not a big issue. I looked at your report. It talks about offices. Now, I happen to have a better knowledge of some of the provinces. And we know it's an administrative matter.
But the truth of the matter is that there's only one regional office in the Eastern Cape, not two. Probably if you use Umtata, it's more of a, if you were to say it, a satellite office, doesn't enjoy what we'll say is a full status of a regional office. Link those things again. When we link it, we think it will be, when we compile that report, it will go more in details. It's not a question of trying to fight over regional matters. But if you look generally, the proximity of the provincial office to your area that is largely an area that is known to be a supplier of labor, which is your former Transkei, and the distance where the regional office is and where majority of those people are is almost for a day. So, but it's an issue that when we deal with it, we'll be able to package it much more in terms of in a more perspective way, a better perspective. But few issues that I see for me, I don't want to say they're of concerns, but they have to be clarified. Because if I say it's a concern gets noted and then move. The first thing is that it might have been much better for us to get, based on your previous submission also. Because if you look in relation to, if one were to get probably clarity, one of the things that was raised, and I know it may sound quite problematic, is the funding for CGS. To the best of our knowledge, CGS is not doing work for the MR only in terms of its geological task. Now, in terms of what you put here as a potential allocation, what has not been clear, is it a potential allocation because of its location or because of strategic location? Those are two different things. But location is within the framework of the department. But the strategic location is by being a resource for even beyond what the department is doing. Because one of the things that we might have in there is to look at an allocation and assume that this allocation is being provided for work within the departmental exploration work, when it could be much more expanded. So that issue for me, it is we have to get clarity as to whether this allocation is for the extended task or is for a narrow limited focus for what is going to be done. But if we sit here, we can sit and say, oh, there is an allocation put here for purposes of what we are concerned on. Maybe there's another one that will be coming from the other side, also for purposes in that area. So, in simple terms, is the money, is the allocation, this extra allocation meant for mineral rights explorations only? If one were to put that question crudely. Or is for any task that CGS is expected to undertake? But also linked to this, I accept the fact that I was trying to look on your strategic outcomes on quite a number of issues, including the work that CGS is supposed to be doing. The biggest challenge is, isn't this the same application? I understand in terms of financial allocation and self-sustainability of your state diamond trade. But surely, in terms of being subjected to similar objectives and outcomes, so one doesn't get in the presentation, you don't get a sense that in the entire process of your four programs, there is something that is an expectation on what will have to be done in relation to the task of the state diamond trade, except the part that says, in terms of allocation, they are sustainable, hence they will not be located. But I think in terms of performance, they are expected to be also of the same measure, regardless of funding on its own. So I think that clarity will have to be provided in relation to the work.
Thirdly, I don't get you on this issue. In the records that one has looked at, even on last year, this, I thought by now to address also the question that you raise, the cases that you have currently in the mining, particularly in the platinum, in relation to cases of women abuse, especially cases of rape. I think in your report last year, you also raised an issue that which one would have thought we'd get now being shared here. The women in mining strategy, which still remains an outstanding matter. Is it a matter that probably want to share it separately from these processes? And to what extent now is it part of your programs? Because in your report, one hand gets the defense. Also, on your output and targets, I know we asked this question and the information was received. We'll deal with that issue on another day. At least we were grateful to say within 10 days, not 7 days. You were willing to provide it within 7 days. Okay, you met the 10 days that we put. The biggest problem is that on your summary, there is no clarity in terms of the outcome. Amongst other things that we, for instance, we asked in that information was a question that said, we take the answer, which I think was asked here, who owns. But what we couldn't get was a question that said, from the point of approval and allocation to the point of operation, what is the status? Because we're raising this so that we can understand. For instance, if you say, we made that example, if you say you've got 16,000 plus applications, how many have been approved? How many are South African and how many are foreign or global owned? And how many, in that context, if they are South African, how many will fall under the category of HDSA? But most importantly, on top of that, how many are still controlled from the point of origin? Because amongst other things we said, you give people applications, they get exploration rights or your mining or even permit. But at the ultimate end, the ownership is not a reflection of the first point of origin. The person now who does the operation is only falling on the category, in most cases, on the category of the 26%. He's no longer the person, but the person. So in essence, you give someone a right or a permit, but the actual operator is someone who never applied for that. So we wanted to get that information. And if you look now in terms of the target, it might be easy to put a target and measure it. But in terms of quantity, is the issue that we are unable to get. I take your point, but I think we must agree in your slide. I'm not going to go to all of them. And I think the MEC of Northwest raised this issue. Maybe we must find a way to deal with it in your program. But if the program is going to say, my worry is that we seem not to have a consistent system that is working. First, the tuberculosis. The gold mine in your presentation are not giving a good picture. One minute they go down. For instance, last year they would have been down. But this year they are up in terms of what you present now. So it might go back and then ask a question. Do we have a correct system? Or is there something? Same thing in silicosis. On fatalities, your increase is on platinum. If one looked at it. So, in as much as, because if we start from 1993 to 2014, yes, we will get the stats that will show a decrease. But if we move year by year, it must also tell us that what is it that we could have done wrong. So that we don't lose stats, because my worry is that if 10 people died last year, in terms of the presentation, and this year is 14, surely it can be measured on an average. Every average would be correct. But on specific, it tells us that there would have been something that goes wrong. So I think that issue for me it might be important that you provide us with clarity. The issue that was raised here with illegal mining
is not reflecting here in relation to a serious matter. I'm sure you are sitting with a report that one has thought on the possible litigation, state litigation against the state on the basis of illegal or terrorist crimes. Is there, because I look at your report, you talked about there's something that says litigation in under legal, and it includes litigations that are free. Now, shouldn't we get, is there a possibility that the committee will be able to be shared with that report so that it can have a common understanding of to what extent is this problem of illegal mining? I understand some of the issues that were raised around small-scale mining and so forth. Those are some of the issues. But I think in relation to the reports, there might be an issue too. That thing, you presented and they were all read with shock. But I can't catch it here again in the report. Is it a project or a campaign on the history of mining in this country? Now, in your slides that you showed there, you showed even graves of mine workers unidentified and unaccounted for that were very close to disused hostels now. Which actually meant that the worker would be working on the mines, clearly looking over and opens the window, looking over the graves that when my day comes, I won't go home, that is where I will be going. Now, I can't find anything that says there's an allocation for that program here. If I miss it, please, can you reflect it on me that no, it is where it is. Otherwise, it would say to me, it's a program that is being run completely separate from what you are presenting here. But if it is a program that is here, in my view, it should then have been contained here. So I thought that I must be able to flag those issues for your own information. But if the committee then is going to look at approving what to say, it must also be well versed of some of these issues. The last issue, CM, I think we'll take time on that one. Generally, it does help in terms of the legislative framework to get a sense of the legislative processes or expectations, which I think that's what the committee will deal with the issues. Well, that one of the MPRDA referral back is more now on an administrative process of how it's being handled by both houses, but the matter has already been referred for them to then assist in the process. But I think the committee's interest, not just on the MPRDA only, is a common understanding what is the foresight vision from the department in terms of legislative development around the issues, for example, in the state mining command, so that the committee at least can get a sense that one, in terms of the program presented, it must prepare itself that this is what it is dealing with or approving, but also more importantly, to see whether 90% or 70% of the time that the committee will be using will be on issues that relate to policy formulation or legislative formulation. I think that's what the committee mainly is called. Because when these things are listed, here, they actually form part of the program. And when they start to kick in, probably the committee will be caught unawares of what is lying ahead. And so that's, if that has not been looked at in terms of your milestones, this is what we expect by this time and this time, so that when we deal with the specifics of what I presented here, we can understand how we're going to fit in. I think that is the context that honorable members wanted to understand. But I'm sorry to finish most of, or make you that afresh with the presentation, but I felt that these are the areas that they could both matter of interest. Are there any issues honorable members would want to add or follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One issue which I haven't heard anything about, and I may have missed it because I wasn't here, was the issue about the audit reports on the mining charter. I haven't heard anything about that. And then the only other issue which I think is relevant, I think we mentioned it before. You know, the employment statistics go up or they go down. The production figures go up or go down. Or the commodity prices go up or go down, and they all interrelate to each other. And it comes to the figures which you've indicated. But the question basically is,
one will only be able to determine whether the Mine Health and Safety Department is really getting on top of the problem is when you have a fixed measurement in terms of man hours worked or production hours. Because then you'll be able to, like, if for instance the plumbing industry, as you can see here, has a 20% fatality figure, but they probably increase their production hours by, I don't know, they say 300%. I'm just giving a rough figure. It still shows progress in terms of man hours worked. But, you know, it's like someone not doing anything, he doesn't make a mistake. Only those people who do something that makes mistakes. So by virtue of that correlation, we need to be having a standard where we can say, per million hours worked, we've increased, we've decreased, and that gives you a fixed measurement. But I'm not sure that those statistics are readily available, so that one can say there has been an increase or decrease or improvement or not. Of course, one fatality is one too many. But in terms of the risk, one then appreciates what the workers are exposed to, but the department is in fact being on top of the problem.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I think we take all the points given here and tabled by members very seriously. But I think that our enemy here is always high, because there's so much that we should be able to share with you. But we need some sort of time where you're not rushed to share you to the next meeting, where we're not confined and so on. Because then we just fill in the gaps in what we're doing now. So I'm just saying that maybe we need to see it through and come to that position, including the intensive work that you're talking about in terms of the fluctuations, in terms of production, business, employment, those are the mines that are opening, the ones that are closing, what are the trends. Maybe that's something that we would also have to come back to you with, looking into also the performance of the Center of Excellence and what we want to do going into the future. That might be something that we might want to come back to you with. I did say that the evaluation, the report, audit report of the performance will be out by the end of this month. Okay, there has been a lot of work done, but final report has got to be out. You remember that final reports of companies for the performance of 10 years every year came at the end of 2014, in December. So we just tried to deal with that final thing, but the committee should be able to report and get the report at the end of this month. Chair, I think it's important that maybe we should, in the time that you allocate, give you our legislative roadmap that connects the dots, maybe even previously, now where we are and where we're going. Because unless we do that, it's going to be difficult to track these things. And you raise here a very matter, because some of the issues that we can't do is retrospective application of the law. Before we pass this law, there are a lot of things that went wrong in the mining industry in terms of devastation of the environment, the question of ex-mine workers that we are dealing with today, the issues of graves that you talked about, what do we do in those instances? So it's important that we know that what we do, even if we amend the laws, we do that going forward, not looking backwards. But we've got to deal with the legacy of mining in this country. It's not, we can't dodge it. It faces us every time. You see, when we engage communities of ex-mine workers, widows and so on, some of them don't even know where their husbands are. Since they went to the mines, they don't come back. You know, it's a historical fact and still happened up until some time in our history. So this is a very sorry state of affairs, but we've got to deal with it. We'll have to come and brief you on the illegal mining situation, as well in terms of where we are, where we're going, etc. And the issue that you're talking about, of possible litigation, there are a lot of issues here. There are people who we cannot find sometimes. Illegal mining is illegal. I mean, we can just take it as a criminal matter to say that you take the risk, etc. But we realize there are people that we can't find that went down these ports and so on, even the rescuers can't locate. So it's a very difficult situation of mining that we have to come to grips with. The question of that about the measurement of consistent measurement in terms of TB, in terms of silicosis, etc., that you already checked, it's a matter that we have to come back to. The reality is that some of the these are latent. You work now today, I've worked in the mines for so many years, I might only get silicosis now. after and so on. So that's the point that we have to deal with. That's what earlier I was saying, the worst is still to come, because we are going to intensively do a good examination of ex-mine workers, of current mine workers, and their families, and the communities, peri-mine communities, etc.
We've noted the issue that you're raising about some blood trading and so on, and where the original applicant ends up as a minority shareholder or whatever. So I'm not sure that we're at the stage yet where we can give you a full report, but it's a work in progress and so on. The women in mining strategy, we need to come back with that, I think. The STD, CGS, and other issues that we've raised here, we've noted them. They're just on the CGS, which is Council for Geoscience. Council for Geoscience is an old institution of over 100 years. So we're not starting, we've got to continue where they ended in terms of what they're going forward. But please note that there is a lot of information, unutilized information that has been researched by Council for Geoscience that is there for economic development of this country. So it's good, let's give them more money to be able to do more. But also we must also be aware as a country, and we want to put a lot of money into research, that we cannot spend money in doing some work that is not utilized for the economy. That we must bear in mind. But we have to go on, fund our institutions, keep them current, in technologies and applications and so on. But if you go there, you'll see that we're really short of some of the sharp industrialists who can go there, take the information, and make it work for them on the ground. Because South Africa has got beautiful rocks. Wherever you go, you've got the most beautiful rocks in the world. And it's true. And maybe I should stop there.
Okay. I will say closing remarks. No. Look, honourable members, I said what we should do then, let's agree, we'll do the follow-up, that in order for the committee to make an informed decision in relation to the budget and the ABP that the department presents, we will have to have a second bite with this information that we think is going to be relevant. And what we will do, we will try and craft it so that you don't forget DG, what is it that is required, and forward it to you. It will mean then our first meeting post recess, we'll look at that. I think the second thing what we'll have to also do is to get the actual program that we'll have to follow towards the finalization of the of this process, so that we are clear what we are working on, including the date for the approval or rejection of the proposed budget. So I think on that note, we will handle the issue, and we will go back, so that DM, you don't forget the issue that we raised. Is that what honourable members agree with? Any move of that? Yeah, I want to look at you, honourable Malem. Don't put this thing in front. Yeah.
The DG, it looks like he's not happy. I don't know. Maybe there are issues you wanted to deal with.
I'm comfortable. But it's under the summary now, even of the chair. The DM will summarize, that's what you said. Now, okay. Any more? Huh?
Thank you, sir. I move on the adoption of the proceedings going forward.
The problem is that the distance between your face and your mouth and this thing is too much. Huh? No, not. Oh. You see, if it was the DM or Joel, at least you would have understood their very proximity to the mic. Is. Any other kind of?
Mahoshi Matala was second commander Hoshi of the Mananda. Chair, I think it must not be discussed by the committee. He knows very well that. Thank you.
I would want when someone is disputing, one chief once said, it's like your parents. If I'm your chief, you can't change it. I have become your chief. So, all one day, if there is a contestation, who's the subject of who to be here? Okay, honorable members, I think on that note, let me then share the issue. We're done with this one. We do have the report that came in now. Let me read all the issues that I'll send you quickly. The report has come in now. I think the last comment from the DM must be the reason. But the department has met that requirement. But again, I'll be the DG. Let the turnaround time be not compliance. Be just a turnaround time. So if we say 10 days, it must come in before 10 days, not when we can't say something. Secondly, we're also informed the legal opinion has come in. There's been a request, I must say, from the CEO, State Diamond Trader. We think we may find the situation much more better before even we could go through the exchange of legal documents. But we'll look on those issues, and then we'll come back. We'll try to give them the audience and hear what they want to say. If that legal opinion, the problem, I must be honest again and be frank to honorable members, I've just gone through, I've not seen it in total. It has got the potential of not assisting us. It's that legal opinion. So we have to find a way. For an example, it seems indirectly to suggest that they may have a case on what they are arguing. But it also provides what could be the alternative of the committee. And I must be honest, I don't want to make a huge mountain out of nothing. So we're dealing with that issue. We think we must listen to what the state demonstrator, but they used to be eager to meet with the committee and resolve the issue once and for all. I think we must take that route and then we come back and report to the committee. The third issue is the one in relation to secretaries here at least. We've had countless meetings with the legal services, as well as the staff on the referral, on what procedure. It seems everybody is to and fro. On what procedure to follow in relation to the bill that has been referred to the committee. So we hope by the time we come back, there would have been a way out. But it's not on our doorstep. It's on their doorstep to say, this is what the committee has decided on. Now let's make the referral. They seem not to be clear which is supposed to go, which one is supposed to deal with it. So we are still dealing with that issue until there's clarity. And I can share with honorable members, we also shared that with the House Secretary to say, here's an issue. Can you please assist us in relation to the administrative application of what has to be done? So it's beyond what the committee can do. But on our side, I think as a committee, we have dealt with what we're supposed to do. Now it's about what is supposed to be the next step, which is not us. It's a step of a procedural issue and what they are supposed to do with it. But the committee was clear it will deal with it as and when views and other things of the process have been expressed, and then it will come back to the committee to deal with it. So on that note, I think that is the information that remains outstanding. I did make that commitment. Nothing disappears until it's finalized. On that note, if it's acceptable, or where are the minutes? Where am I? I would have suggested otherwise. Yes. The minutes is the minutes of the 4th March 2015.
corrections. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Any mover? Honorable Mandela.
Thanks. I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 4th of March 2015. Thank you.
Any seconder?
Chapter 7 seconds.
Okay. What is arising? Page 1. Page 2. I've already complied with page 2. Oh, no, not page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Yeah, that's why I complied. I complied with the resolution on page 4. We have already dealt with it. Okay. Having done so, the minutes are due. Honorable member. No, next to it. Honorable members. We will forward the next week. There is instead of the committee, you'll remember it's committee week, is the oversight to the Northern Cape. I hope we'll have forwarded honorable members what we have done with the program for the day. We'll hold that side. The department is aware. We're going to your province, DM. We are not saying Shabiko, no, we are just saying we have got your problem. From late Monday until early hours of Friday. And, yes, it will be, the program will have to forward it to you in Chukwu as it is finalized. But we must say, you know, sometimes the program for those areas is more dependent to where we are going. But the advantage is that, unlike in agriculture, we don't have to give prior notice that we are coming. So on that note, honorable members, those who are going to be on the oversight, we will meet next week. Those who will meet, that are taking recess early, we'll meet in the next term. On that note, thank you very much, honorable members, and the department, the meeting stand adjourned.
I was not ready to sit now. I'm asking your number. I said no.
My number?
Huh?
My number?
Huh?
800.
You are with me?
800.
Yeah.